Thank you, Brother Martin, brothers and sisters. I was going to speak on the mission inherit the earth, thinking there might be some Iranians amongst us, but as we've got different arrangements now, I've changed it back to my old favourites, and I hope you'll find this talk, which is a new one, interesting. I'm starting off a little bit different from what I normally do. Still in Genesis 1 and the fifth day, where we get birds and we get fish coming to the fore, but highlighting this time and reminding you, my dear brothers and sisters, how amazing it was that God created everything in such abundance. So I've highlighted there in red, swarm with swarm, swarm, multiply, fill, multiply. So the Lord didn't hold back, did he? He didn't hold back. The seas were full. And the skies, likewise, were birds. So swarms. You know, when you look at the Hebrew there, it does really mean exactly that. A multitude can't possibly attempt a number. I'm stressing that point, and then it runs even onto the sixth day. And of course, we then get the insects, the beasts of the earth, and then culminating with man. Now, I'm not going to read all through that. You know those words. But just to emphasise again, even when it comes to mankind, it's threefold death. Be fruitful, multiply, fill. So the earth, when it was created and given life, had it in superabundance, for want of a better phrase. A man, which was small in number by comparison, was told actually go and match it. Go and multiply, be fruitful, fill the earth. Just as the fish filled the sea. And so there we have those amazing words describing the fifth and the sixth day. That life didn't just come gradually, you know, a single cell, then it multiplied into, and then nothing gradual about it. Dramatic. Dramatic. And superabundant. So that's the earth. That's the earth. So I'll now show you this simple diagram. Oversimplified when it comes to the universe, obviously. But to give us some sort of an understanding of where the Earth is in relation to the other features of the solar system. There it is. You can see the planets and so on. And I hope you've worked out where Earth is. I haven't got my marker with me, but it's there. And by comparison to, say, Jupiter, it's very small. And there are other comparisons that we can make there. The whole lot is very small compared to the Sun. But the big, big difference, brothers and sisters, the huge difference between the Earth and everything else is not that it's more beautiful than everything else, although I find Saturn interesting. Some even see a beauty on Jupiter, with the red spot and so on. But the Earth surely is beyond compare, really. The Earth is incredibly beautiful, as my next slide will show. But the big difference over and above that is that everything else is sterile, dead, nothing. You know, the scientists, for every sending things forth, even to try and land on asteroids these days and so on, to see a little bit of water. Oh, the joy of finding a bit of water. The hope that they might find a little bacteria, microbe somewhere. And over the years, we've had headlines actually in papers, they found this. But when later on they go and find out that those bugs are actually on the equipment that they sent up in the first place, that doesn't hit the papers for some reason. So they found nothing. The whole thing's sterile out there. And I don't think we make enough of it, brothers and sisters. And you can see Jeff's really strong on it today. It's an amazing difference. It's something we should tell people about and ask them to explain. You know, they may say, well, you go out far enough, you keep going on, there's a parallel universe. Well, let them say that. Let's have the proof of that. There is no proof of it. That's a theory. Let's stick to the facts. The facts are that which we know of is dead, apart from the planet, which has a myriad of life forms. So there's my picture of the beautiful Earth taken from the surface of the moon, which has a fascination, but I don't find it particularly beautiful. And it's dead. We look at that beautiful blue orb there, and it's very much alive. And it made me think, I thought, well, I just wonder how many different life forms are on the planet. So I went hunting forth on the internet and I found some interesting answers, actually. And here we go. The estimated number of plants and animals described and classified is 1.7 million. You know, we're rounding up here, obviously. 1.7 million. Now, let's get this clear in mind. This is different types. We're not saying the total number of creatures. We're not saying that. We're talking about the types. You know, an elephant is just one out of 1.7 million. It's an amazing number when you think about it. And I've chosen my words carefully here, as they do on the internet when you read of this. Estimated, described, classified. In other words, discovered, thought about, named. So they're named, classified, 1.7 million. So the estimated number of species still to be found, described and classified is 5 million. Now that number varies, you know, we have different experts give their guess on it. I've given you the smallest number I've found so far. Believe it or not, but it's there. They're suggesting there's 5 million creatures we haven't actually discovered yet. That haven't been described and classified. You know, when it's the rainforest, which sadly are diminishing, and as they diminish, that number obviously reduces somewhat. And as you go to the bottom of the oceans, they're just finding new stuff all the time. So that's what's estimated. Now this is plants and animals. When we get into the scary world of microbes, it's estimated there's a trillion. Now they can't all be bad, can they, brothers and sisters? You know, we tend to think of these things all being bad. But they can't all be bad because we're outnumbered, aren't we? We're seriously outnumbered. There are a lot of them that do us harm, but there's also a lot of them that do us good. There are microbes and so on that are described and classified that are within us. In our digestive system, for instance, and we need them. So let's not get too frightened about that. But it's staggering, isn't it, brothers and sisters? It's staggering. There's all this life. And this is just a number of different types. Not the grand total of them all. Much, much greater number. The only thing that disappoints me, and I hope the Lord will forgive me, there's only 9,000 birds. And we've only got 250 of them in this country. 750 in Israel. Fantastic. And there's nothing. Nothing on the moon. Nothing on Mars. Nothing on Jupiter. Nothing on anything else ever been hit and seen and just looked at and wondered at. Nothing. Everything's dead. So what are we going to talk about? We're going to talk about one. Now, I have this suspicion. No one's actually told me face to face, but I have this suspicion that people say, are thinking, oh, Jeff, you pick nice things like the painted lady butterfly or a barn owl. You know, you just pick these nice things. So I'm going to pick something that's not so nice. Is that okay? you might think it's lovely. There's one or two people I think a little bit freakish, I say, and actually like these things. I don't. But I don't want to be accused of always coming up with a nice sugary item, you know? So we're not going to talk about a cuckoo and you know, lovely things that we can relate to and admire. You know, it's just a cuckoo's voice, if not its habit. I'm picking something completely different. And it's a lousy picture I've got here. because I'm no photographer, and I just took this on my phone as we were walking. In October, we had a holiday down in Saundersfoot for a few days. On our way back from Ireland, it was cleverly arranged. I like that idea, Helen, that was really good. And we went walking. It was after that hurricane that was out in America. And as a result of that hurricane, things were coming on, hitting the Cornwall coast and the South Wales coast and so on. And we're walking on this lovely beach. It was a lovely sunny day like this. And I saw this thing. Or was it somebody else? I don't want to go too far and claim the credit. Somebody saw this thing. I think it was our Nathan, actually, to be fair. But anyway, I ran up to it. What was that? And then I looked and I realised what it was. Now, David Honey's probably seen millions of these, so he's already on to it. Does anybody know what it is?
Jellyfish.
Oh, I'm so pleased you say that, because it's not jail. I'm sorry. Yeah, I would have said a jellyfish. I said a jellyfish that day, but I said something else, and then I found out it wasn't a jellyfish. Of course, you all know David is a Pharsalia. Pharsalis, isn't it?
You took the words right.
I actually thought that was the language of Cornwall for a moment. So that's what it is. You all knew that. It was just a matter of time, wasn't it? The next day we went walking and we found a better specimen. So there you go. So I've got two pictures now. And it's rare in these talks, all these pictures I show, they're never of my own. But these, I'm proud to say, are my own. But not very good, really. And what we're talking about is actually a Portuguese man of war. Portuguese man of war. And I always thought it was a jellyfish, to be fair to Jill. But it's not. It's something called a... Get my tongue around it, it's difficult. Siphonophore. Siphonophore. Not a jellyfish. And it's a very, very interesting thing. It's not even one animal. It's not a single entity. This is really difficult to get your head around. I'm still struggling. It's a colony of organisms that work in unison. Now, I'd just love to know how evolutionists can get an explanation for this. How does this work? It's not a single animal. There's not even a brain that's organising everything. It's a colony. So what you have is something called zooids, which are genetically identical, so they can come together, they can link up, and it becomes one form, one single form, and it has to be genetically the same to do that. That I can just about understand. But nevertheless, it's a colony. It's made up of individual organisms. And so there are four main types. One that deals with floating, one for capturing prey, one for feeding, and one for reproduction. And there it is. There's a Portuguese man of war. No type can survive on their own. They all rely on each other. Now, well, I say that morning, I looked at it, I thought, you know, it's just a jellyfish. But I'll go and find out. I'm intrigued. I've never seen one before. So I thought, I'll go and find out what it's about. And I found this. I thought, whoa, simple jellyfish. I'm not going to accept that off anybody at any time, anywhere. This is not simple. This is complicated. But it's also wondrous, is it not? It's wondrous that you've got this different organisms that come together, this arrangement, not one animal, a collection of animals put together, and it becomes one thing. And it's all this dependence, and they need each other, they have to be together. One doesn't survive without the other. And there's that diagram, and you can see the various parts as you go from the top down, really, which is convenient. And we can't go through it all, but I'm going to just talk about the pneumatophore, which is the float. And I shall say float from now on. There it is. And I thought, well, that's easy. Nothing to say about the float. That'd be a 2-minute job that well. Oh, no. No, it isn't. It's in two parts. It's, as you can see, an outer muscular case with a sail-like crest. So you can see how the idea of a Portuguese man of war comes to the fore, because that was the name given to the old sailing boats, warships like Nelson had, you know, days of Trafalgar and so on. So that's where the name comes from. You've got this sail, you see. And their muscles in that crest, so it can be lowered, raised and lowered. I thought it was just fixed, but it's not fixed. It can be raised or brought down. That's quite amazing. But then you've got that gas bladder, and I've had to put some of the books right, because some of the sites I've been reading, at least on the internet, right, because they talk about an air bladder. But it's not an air bladder, because within that are gases, but it's not air, such as we're breathing. So I've taken the nerve to change it to gas bladder rather than air bladder. Because what you have inside that sack is always, and I don't know why, always 40% carbon monoxide. Nitrogen, argon, and sometimes traces of carbon dioxide. That's what's in that in there. So it's not air, it's this gas mixture. And this creature, if I call it that now, I'd say it's a colony really, it adjusts how long it sits in the water, how low it sits in the water, by controlling the gas density in the gas bladder using a gas gland. That's clever, isn't it? So it can go down as well as be floating on the top by just letting a bit of the gas out. How is that arranged? I guess if I probed deep enough and I went to university for a little bit longer, I might be get into that. Then I wouldn't be surprised if nobody actually knows. Nobody's actually studied that. There are probably more exciting things to be looking at if you're that bright. But that's what happens. And so if there's an attack on the sail, that can be deflated and it can actually submerge. How could that come about by chance? There's just no way that can happen by chance. That has been designed. It's a wonderful, wonderful creation. And that's just the flow. So coming back to our diagram. The next thing that surprised me is that underneath the float, 12 chlamydia or stalks. You know, when I looked at it, it just looked all just a bit of a mess, to be honest. I know it was washed up on the beach, so I wasn't seen at its best, but it just seemed a bit of a tangled mess. It didn't seem to be any sensible order about it. But there are 12, always 12 stalks that come out from underneath that flow. And there's a budding pattern that's very specific. The zooids mostly appear in groups of three, called, not unsurprisingly, tripartite groups. So you've got this idea of threes. So what looks a bit of a confusion is actually ordered. Well, the zooids for reproduction, gastrozooids for feeding and digestion. And this one is a bit more difficult for me. Dactylozooids for catching prey. So you have these groups of three. And we can't, in the time allotted this morning, go through each one of these, but we'll look at something. Incidentally, the gastrozooids have a reddish-brown appearance, partly due to the accumulation of hemoglobin from the blood of the prey. Now, we have hemoglobin, don't we, in our red blood cells to transfer the oxygen around our body and so on. Or when this creature takes its prey, gives it that coloration. And you certainly can see that even on a washed up Portuguese man of war on the beach. You can see it. That's why it's that color. And if you had a bit more time, you could have a look at this diagram on the left and you'd see, you can perhaps see now, because I'm sure you're sharper than I am on these things. The idea of three, that all splits up in three, and it's ordered, and it's tripartite groups, and there it goes. All nicely ordered. And it's got to be nicely ordered because you've got the catcher, and the catcher, they're the one that engulfs, for another crude word, and then another disperses, you know, reproduces. You've got to have those three, haven't you? It can't be as haphazard as it looks. So let's have a look at the nasty bit of it, really. The dactylosids. And that's in two main things, really. You've got the blue ampulla. I had to look up what that means. An ampulla is basically a tube. So you've got a blue tube, and then you have hundreds of nematocysts. And they are the things we've got to look out for. Because that actually is the stinging mechanism. And it took me a while to find a website to give me any sort of diagram about the nematocysts. But I've got one in the end, you can see it down here, yeah? This is what we're talking about. And what's true of jellyfish, you know, we get stings from jellyfish, don't we? And Portuguese man of war, they have their stings, so there's definitely a similarity in that respect. So it's about the sting. They've got thousands of stings. And if you look at that diagram, it's very sophisticated in itself. There's a trigger, and you've got a coiled light harpoon. And when the trigger goes, boom, shoots off, and it latches onto the prey. And then it'll pull up, and then it goes up through the blue tube, drawn up. That took a bit of thinking about, I suggest. This creature, I repeat, is brainless, literally, without a brain. So how did it come about? It can only have come about through God's wisdom. We may not like it. I certainly don't want to be stung by it. Perhaps I should ask the question, has anyone been stung looking for one of these? I don't think it'd be nice. Incidentally, before we move off that screen, those long tentacles, which is a crude word for this system, they can go on for 60 metres. You know, from here, outside the door. They go a long way. A long way. And the ones we were seeing were small, really. So there you go. The stinging cells are tiny capsules with miniature harpoons that pierce into the prey. And they'll feed on small fish, shrimp, marine plankton. And they discharge a paralysing venom. You know, lovely little cocktail there, just for the job. There's a chemistry there now. We're into biochemistry now. How that comes about? And there's some idea of what's going on. But once the prey has been latched onto, then the muscles literally just bring it up. Now, because it's 1 or 2 metres I'll go to, and I don't have sound, I bought one of these sound bars, and if I bleed him crossing fingers, I'll get you all to do it right now. I'm going to show you a clip from David Attenborough, how he doesn't believe in God, although some say sometimes he gives a passing possibility to the situation that there may be a God, but he doesn't talk in those terms. I don't know how anyone can know so much and see so much and spew out all this rubbish about evolution, but he has got a nice voice and he does get good films, so I'm hoping this is going to work.
The Portuguese man of war. It floats with the help of a gas-filled bladder, topped by a vertical membrane. With that serving as a sail, it maintains a steady course through the waves. Threads trail behind it, some as much as 30 meters long. Each is armed with many thousands of stinging cells. A single tentacle could kill a fish, or in rare cases, a human. But among its lethal tentacles lurks a man-o-war fish that feeds by nibbling them. Whilst this fish has some resistance to the stings, it must still be extremely careful. Most other fish are not so lucky. One and reels it in. It's already paralyzed. Specialized muscular tentacles transfer the victim to others that digest the catch, liquefying it with powerful chemicals. All that is left is a scaly husk.
First question, did you hear it all right?
Yes.
So it worked?
Yes.
Great, that's good news. Horrible thought, but if man was ever to find life on another planet and he found something like that, it'd be a bit scary, wouldn't it? If that was the first thing you ever found anywhere. I'm just checking nobody's fainted or passed out. That's all right. And I don't know why God's chosen to create something like that. And I do wonder what its future is in the kingdom age, when all nature's going to be in harmony. I dare say they'll go extinct. But the lesson for us now is that they're there. And they haven't come together by chance, have they? They've been designed. And so we move on and we say, O Lord, how manifold are your works. In wisdom have you made them all. The earth is full of your creatures. Here is the sea, great and wide, which teems with creatures innumerable, living things both small and great. And you might think, well, that's the end of it, but I'm going to give you another 5 minutes, and I'm sorry, I'll go through as quick as I can. But having got there, I thought, I'm going to sort out that little fish. But in doing that, I discovered that Portuguese man of war are quite a favourite food for the loggerhead turtle, which is nice, isn't it? So we've got a good guy. And the loggerhead turtle's okay, because the skin is so thick, the sting cannot penetrate. And for some reason, you wouldn't think there's anything worth eating there, but they love them. So they keep their numbers down. So, big cheer for the loggerhead turtle. And then there's this thing, which is obviously small, it's on someone's hand, it's only about an inch or two. And I came across, I thought, what is that? And it's actually, of course, you all know, Glaucus Atlanticus, isn't it? It's one of them. And it's actually a slug. And this slug, amazingly, spends all its life upside down. So the bit down the central bit looks like a spine. It's actually the foot. You know, we have a slug and we see the horrible slimy foot. That's it on this slug. And it tends to be upside down. And it uses counter shading, which is another way of saying camouflage. Blue. It has itself upside down, amazing, with the foot going skywards. And that's all coloured blue. And then underneath it's grey. This way it doesn't get spotted by predators so easily. But this slug has got an air sac in it, and it can use that air sac to make it move up and down the depths of the water. Bright little slug, that, isn't it? Got a little air sac in it. Fantastic. And it can swim, just a little apparently. It's not a great swimmer, can do a little bit. It's got six feathery appendages. You'll see it on the next photograph much better, and it can use them and get some sense of direction as it goes up or down. And it's beautiful for a slug. I hate slugs, but I like this one. But if you ever go to Australia or somewhere where it's warm, where they tend to be, and you see one, don't pick it up, because it'll sting you just as well as a Portuguese man of war. Because this slug loves Portuguese men of war. And what it does, it eats them. And, you know, that paragraph I've got up there, it's so easy to write, but to get your head around that, it's staggering. It can take in, it can imbibe these horrible stings and sort it out within its digestive system so it doesn't get damaged itself, and yet transfer those stings out to those appendages and won't betide anyone who touches it. Isn't that amazing? Now, you can't have this slug without the Portuguese man of war. This slug can't live without a Portuguese man of war. Another question for our evolutionist friends to try and get their head round. You are the Lord, you alone. You have made the heaven, the heavens with all their host, the earth and all that is on it, the seas and all that is in them. And you preserve all of them, and the host of heaven worships you. So there it is, again, created by God for a purpose. And eventually we get around to this fish. It's the Nomeus Gronovi. And the Cubans love it. They put it on one of their stamps. And David Attenborough made reference to it. Because this fish lives within the environs of those tentacles. And it has the nerve to nibble at the tentacles from time to time. Although it's reckoned its food actually is from bits of debris that break off from the Portuguese man of war's prey. But either way, that's where it dwells successfully. And they can grow up to about a foot apparently, so they can get quite big. But I guess 3 or 4 inches is more typical. Got a wonderful skin design, again, you know, camouflage in mind. And the lower fins, the pectoral fins, are particularly strong. And it needs to be, because it has to weave this way and that way, make quick turns. And it's resistant, 10 times more resistant to the toxin than another fish. I think Mr. Attenborough could have made a little bit more than that than he did. 10 times more resistant. However, it's got to be agile and not get too carried away. And then I discovered it's got 41 vertebrae, which for a fish is actually a lot. And it's reckoned its structure is like that to give it that agility to move quick this way, that, if and when we cried. And so Job asks the question, or Job makes the statement, and I make it now. Ask the beasts and they'll teach you. The birds of the heavens, and they will tell you. Or the bushes of the earth, they will teach you. And the fish of the sea will declare to you. Who among all these does not know that the hand of the Lord hath done this? In his hand is the life of every living thing, and the breath of all mankind.